SCP-9998, A Prince Among Men. The situational comedy, or sitcom, is a classic hallmark of television that has been going strong for decades. From I Love Lucy, to Seinfeld, to The Office, or, God help you, Friends, sitcoms have been a multi-generational staple of entertainment in the US and elsewhere. For me, 90s sitcoms were a core part of my youth, and although they've never really gotten much respect in the broader community of the arts, there's something uniquely comforting and wholesome about them. SCP-9998 is about a 90s-era sitcom, one that could have easily existed and entertained millions. But of course, it's one rife with anomalies, and a dark connection to a recurring character. Let's take a look. We begin with a final report of inquiry from Dolores Carrington, the inquiry chair of the Ethics Committee, about the SCP-9998 containment breach. Addressed to the O5 Council, it states that she was appointed by them with the full support of the Ethics Committee to chair an inquiry into the events concerning 9998 at NBC Studios in California on March 18, 1999. She has now heard oral evidence from 156 witnesses, drawn from both sides of the veil, and examined much written evidence and other documentation, either submitted from witnesses or sourced by the Foundation's agents. In producing this report, she has set out the events preceding, during, and subsequent to what is widely considered to be one of the most significant containment breaches within the history of the Foundation. With that, we're given the file for 9998, with the object class of Neutralized. The containment procedures state that the normalcy restoration effort has concluded, and 9998 has been erased from the collective consciousness of humanity. Casualties and damage resulting from the finale broadcast have either been repaired, erased, or attributed to non-anomalous causes. A decoy television series by the same name has been manufactured to minimize the risk of Mandela-class amnestic failures. I knew it was the Berenstain Bears. All materials related to 9998 are to be kept in a triple-locked archive, including VHS recordings of seasons 1 through 5, and the season finale, along with publicity material. While viewing of seasons 1 to 4 is permissible for researchers assigned to relevant anomalies, season 5 is not to be viewed without the written consent of 9998's head researcher. Carrington writes that the interviewing of civilian witnesses for the purposes of the inquiry presents complications. Those involved in 9998 display significant trauma and often denial regarding the events of the finale. When attempting to gain information from them, they were dosed with a combination of amnestics to erase memory of overt anomalous activity and nestics to heighten recollection of the time period immediately preceding the 9998 finale. Through this, individuals were led to believe that the finale had yet to air, and they were being interviewed under the premise of a media spotlight regarding the series. If necessary, sedatives and/or various mesmerist practices were deployed to support this pretense. Following participation, all civilian witnesses were processed as part of the overarching normalcy restoration effort. Finally, we're given the description for 9998. A studio audience sitcom titled A Prince Among Men, broadcast on NBC between 1994 and 99 for 5 seasons. The series was created by David Harper, who served as the executive producer and head writer throughout its run, and was produced by NBC Productions in association with Warner Brothers Television Studios. The series revolved around Cornelius Nell Prince, a teenager from a wealthy upper-class background who, as punishment for his comedic antics, is sent by his father to live with working-class relatives in the Lower East Side of New York City. Almost like a Fresh Prince of Manhattan or something. We're given an interview between Carrington and Gary Warrington, the executive president of scripted content at NBC. He says that he knows what people said about the show to begin with, that it was derivative and that they'd seen it before. They caught some heat in those early days from folks saying it was Fresh Prince but safe for a conservative white audience, and the scheduling didn't help. Maybe they weren't 100% wrong, but David Harper always believed in what he was making. He acknowledged the similarities, but he wanted to make something different. Gary asked him once where the idea came from, as there wasn't anything like the show in his background, but he just shrugged and said that he'd always had these characters in his mind ever since he was a kid. Gary told the cast this one day, and they started telling him about how David told them a completely different story at the wrap party for season 2. He had put away about 3 bottles of wine and supposedly started talking about how he found the outline to the series on the Metro one day. The cast is smart. They're not going to tell the world that their golden goose is potentially plagiarized, but they trust Gary as it's his golden goose too. Gary got back to the studio after finding this out, and he told Shayna Tovey, the writer for season 1 and executive story producer for the rest of the seasons. She starts laughing and claims that David got all emotional with her over a lunch once and said that the whole show is based on a play he studied in a literature class at college. A rich lord sends his son to live among the peasants to learn how to rule. That's where the whole 5 lessons came from. Gary has no idea where the idea for the show actually originated and tells Carrington to ask David himself, as she'll get a completely new answer. In October of 1992, David pitched the concept of the series to Gary, as the two were acquainted from their time studying at college. With Gary's support, the concept was bought by NBC Studios as a premise pilot, and after a positive reception from test audiences, a full season was commissioned. The pilot opens with Nell Prince arriving at the home of Joseph Broker, Joseph's wife Jackie, and their 2 children, Allie and Anthony, who are both younger than Nell. Joseph and Jackie are introduced as distant relatives of Nell's, with the ambiguity of the exact nature of their relationship being a running gag throughout the series. Nell has recently embarrassed his father, a wealthy business magnate, by performing a prank whilst his father hosted business associates at their estate for dinner. As punishment for this, Nell's father arranges for his son to stay with the Brokers for the foreseeable future. Much of the humor in the first season derives from the juxtaposition of Nell's former and current circumstances, such as having to share a room with Anthony and contribute to household chores. The series was shot primarily at NBC Studios in Burbank, with a permanent set constructed for the Broker family house at Stage 5, where all scenes filmed were shot in front of a live studio audience. The set was maintained for the duration of the series, until its destruction in the 99-98 incident. The first season was scheduled on Monday nights, in the slot preceding The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, leading both programs to be advertised together as the Prince Hour. After ratings were significantly better than expected, primarily due to positive word of mouth, the final 3 seasons were broadcast in a coveted slot on Thursday nights, prior to Friends. Despite healthy ratings, the 5th season was announced as the final prior to its airing. This was at the insistence of David Harper, which brought him into conflict with studio executives. All 5 seasons were predominantly episodic, but according to the production crew, episodes within individual seasons were intended to be thematically linked. Carrington then interviews Shayna Tovey, writer and executive story producer. Shayna says that whenever they'd get together to start plotting a season, they could count on David to rock up to the writer's room with 2 things, pizza and a lesson. He had this goal that the show would be greater than the sum of its parts, with each season being a lesson for Nell. 5 lessons to learn for him to reunite with his dad. In the 2nd season, we learn that Nell is adopted, and his dad isn't his real dad. Not only that, but his dad can't have kids of his own, and adopted Nell to have an heir to leave the empire to. Nell helps a fellow student, Jennifer, come to terms with her pregnancy and take care of the baby, and there's a load of B-plot around the Broker parents and their kids, with Nell helping strengthen their relationship. That season's lesson was legacy. Nell learns why his dad has such high expectations of him. Season 1 was all about learning your place in the world and what else is out there. Nell's being exposed to things he'd never seen from his penthouse. 2 is the importance of legacy, where you come from. 3 was on growth through pain, with the whole arc with Nell's bully and the episode with Joseph's surgery. 4 was the importance of culture, with Nell teaching the broker kids about music and setting up the theater club at school to put on a Renaissance play. The last theme's the weakest in her opinion, with it just casting Nell as seeing himself as superior. She tried to push back on that, but no success. They started writing the current season, the all-important final one, and David got into such arguments with the big dogs about the fact he wanted it to stop that she thinks all of California heard the screaming. David then rocks up to the room with pizza, but no lesson. It's a secret, he says, that they'll have to wait for the finale that he and he alone is writing to find out. It's noted that following the airing of the series finale, all references to the actors who played the primary cast have been anomalously modified. Any mention of the actors by name has been modified to be the name of their characters on the show. Any information regarding them which is unrelated to the show, such as personal details, federal documents, and prior acting credits, have ceased to exist. It's currently believed that prior to the incident, none of the cast were involved in anomalous activity. Throughout the production and airing of Season 5, however, several anomalous events occurred in relation to 99-98, culminating in the 99-98 incident. We then have the interview with Lucille Keaton, the casting director for the show. She remarks that a new show is her dream, as it's far more exciting than a new cast member joining something long-running. A new show about a family is just perfect, thinking about how these people will interact and what their dynamics are. Does the daughter look more like the mom or the dad? Why the parents choose each other? What's their chemistry? She states that she loves her job. For Prince Among Men, Nell was obviously the role they just had to get right. They wanted someone unknown, someone the audience wouldn't have seen before. David told her how he was sent to live in the skids because of a prank gone wrong. This kid keeps making jokes and playing around, and then one day his dad decides he needs to grow up. That was all she needed. Boyish, charming, and mischievous, but also a bit of a snob. The dynamic with the family doesn't work otherwise. They got headshots in and narrowed it down from there, with her seeing 40 or maybe 50 guys for the role. She knew who was getting the role before callbacks, though. From the moment Nell walked in through the door, he had a star quality to him. She knew Nell would make a great Nell Prince, and she knew Gary and David would agree. It's the role he was born to play. The fifth and final season of the show was comprised of 24 episodes and aired between September of 1998 and May of 1999. Following information received from several sources, the Foundation became aware of several incidents with potential anomalous influence occurring during the production of the show. During filming, cast members repeatedly began to deviate from their scripts, with these deviations often being at odds with the tone of the scene and the show. We're given a transcript taken from the filming of Season 5, Episode 14, Nell Wins Big, in which Joseph and Jackie discuss the news that Nell's father will come to visit with the intent of taking custody. Jackie exclaims that their Nell will be leaving them soon, and that his dad might take him to Gesualdo to celebrate. Joseph asks if that's the pizzeria that just opened up around the corner, but Jackie admonishes him for his lack of culture and says that it's in Italy. Joseph then replies that their prince will travel to lands far further than Europe, and he cannot help but wonder if they have truly prepared him for what is to come, for the pitch-black celestial seas he must traverse. Has his time wallowing with their squalor taught him what his father sought him to learn? In truth, he wishes to keep him with them, as he is truly more impressive than either of his seed. Yet those who fight destiny are just as bound to it as those that embrace it. He is scared, scared for what is to come for us, and for him. The director then calls out and asks what that was, and Joseph just says that he wanted to try something new. Jackie tells him to give her a heads up in the future if he's planning to improv. I mean, sure, it's weird and all, but throw a laugh track over it and it can't be worse than the Big Bang Theory. During the filming of episode 16, Nell learns the ropes, a pregnant member of the studio audience in her third trimester miscarried. There were no previously noted issues regarding the pregnancy. Alejandro Gonzalez, the chief lighting technician for all five seasons, vanished whilst working overtime alone at stage 5. His whereabouts are still unaccounted for. On 12 separate instances of filming, members of the live audience are escorted off the premises after they are unable to cease laughing at the show. Once removed from NBC Studios, they are able to regain composure. The actor playing Nell Prince, who had previously maintained a meticulously clean-cut public image, made controversial statements in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter to promote the show. In response to a mention of a recent homophobic murder, a classic topic for any interview about a family-based sitcom, Nell questioned the validity of homosexual relationships as they are unable to result in biological children. The comments were buried by his agents and the interview printed without them. Rumors also began to circulate regarding the well-being of David Harper. By numerous accounts, he became quick to anger with both cast and crew and took almost exclusive ownership of drafting episode scripts, at one point requesting that site security bar all other writers from the studio. His physical health is also subject to speculation, with eyewitness reports stating his abdomen to be severely distended, whilst others report citing raw, inflamed tumors protruding from underneath his clothing. In the interview with Shayna, she says that she had been working on the show since day one and thought that she had a pretty good relationship with Dave. She won't be attending the filming of the finale, however, as it's very much the Dave show. He's written it, and he's going to direct it, with her not even having seen the script. Dave's scripts and story outlines had taken an increasingly conservative tone as the show progressed, and she just thought it was more important that young girls watching the show knew that there was more to being a woman than just sex, that they could be seen as more than that. There's a scene Dave wrote where Jackie tells Allie that the most important role she'll ever have in life is as a wife and mother. She asked Dave if they could loosen the language a bit, showcase that there's more than just one role model a girl can aspire to, and he blew up. She doesn't know if it was the stress of writing the final season or maybe the coke, but he just screamed in her face. Carrington asks if she remembers what he said to her, and she replies that he said if she was so concerned about female role models on the show, he could get Joseph to chop Jackie's limbs off so she could be an immobile brood mother. She states that that was uncomfortable. Following the airing of episode 6, Nell heads to the Renaissance Fair, NBC announced that the series finale would be broadcast live, a joint decision made by studio executives and Harper. This followed other successful experiments in live episodes, such as the second season of Rock and the season 4 premiere of ER. The episode would be filmed and broadcast once in its usual East Coast slot, resulting in the West Coast broadcast being rescheduled to earlier in the day. The announcement was also joined by the logline for the finale, which read, "Nell's time with the Brokers comes to a close, as his father arrives to return him home." The announcement of the live episode and its summary resulted in intense public interest and media speculation as to the identity of the actor playing Nell's father. Bookkeepers began accepting bets on a wide variety of celebrities, including actors and non-actors, ranging from Donald Trump to seasoned sitcom actor Bill Cosby. The announcement also precipitated a significant increase in anomalous activity, with all of the incidents listed previously occurring after this announcement. Carrington writes that the impetus of investigation into the show was information received from the Hollywood branch of the FBI's Unusual Incidents Unit. For several years, they had investigated claims of an anomalous cult active in Hollywood and wide entertainment circles linked to the number 5. Due to the perceived prevalence of the number in the show, 5 seasons, 5 lessons, filmed on stage 5, and 5 primary cast members, the UIU believed that the rumored cult had influence over the show and informed Foundation contacts of such. Foundation agents did not demonstrate sufficient skepticism nor independent validation of the information the UIU provided, as although the UIU is often regarded as a cooperative organization, all information received from third parties should be challenged and treated with both scrutiny and rigor. The Foundation overly relying on the UIU's hypotheses regarding the show ultimately led to a misidentification of anomalous parties involved. In other words, they thought it was the Fifthists, but it wasn't. Cultural issues present in the Foundation compounded weaknesses in the initial investigation. The show was incorrectly identified as low risk and received insufficient attention and resources. The scale of 9998's eventual containment breach was considered at best highly improbable and at worst impossible. This is best demonstrated with an extract taken from researcher Tim Watchman's testimony. In it, he says that, in retrospect, it sounds negligent, but we're all human and we exist on both sides of the veil. The wall coming down and the war ending really affected them, with things feeling safer. There were still innumerable horrors contained within most Foundation sites, most of which were armed with nuclear failsafes, but both of those things were theirs, under their control. They no longer had to worry about a containment breach arising from the Cold War turning hot, as they managed to take custody of most of the paraweapons both sides had been researching. They were all more optimistic for the future, and for the first time in a while, it felt like things would be okay. Through the course of this inquiry, incidents of complacency were identified in the categorization, investigation, and handling of 32 anomalous items or phenomena initially deemed low risk, in addition to 9998. These discoveries were incidental and unintended, with the true scale of the issue being likely much greater. These issues limited the scope of Foundation investigations, and staff failed to identify several more severe anomalous incidents linked to 9998, which have only come to light through this inquiry. These include a 37-year-old woman in Detroit who expired due to aspirating her own blood arising from a broken jaw. The husband was arrested and charged with her murder, but he claimed that her jaw broke due to excessively laughing at an episode of the show. The president of the Nell Prince fan club, a 26-year-old woman in Boston, attempted to remove the cochlea from both of her ears with a corkscrew. She reported that she was attempting to silence a laugh track which she had begun to hear constantly. A 23-year-old man in Springfield, Oregon, was discovered completely drained of blood in front of his television. The site was devoid of blood with the exception of a bloody handprint on the screen. The Foundation became aware of the incident and the television was taken into custody, on the belief it was anomalous. But after 3 weeks in storage, testing confirmed that it wasn't. Autopsy reports placed the man's death occurring during a broadcast of the show. Two boys, aged 9 and 14, were admitted to St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco with multiple fractures and bruising. They claimed that their father, who had no prior history of neglect or mental health issues, had beaten and admonished them both for not being as good a son as Nell Prince was. Carrington finds that if the Foundation had correctly and completely gauged the full extent of 9998's anomalous influences, the potential for a scenario on the scale of the finale should have been considered, and the incident potentially prevented from occurring. We're then finally given a transcript of the last 10 minutes of the finale. The Broker household is decorated with balloons and a banner reading, "Time to Return." Nell and the Broker family are wearing domino masks. Nell says that before he goes, he just wanted to say that he's had a really swell time here. Joseph makes a few jokes about the ambiguity of their familial relationship, and the three hug. The phone then rings, and Anthony runs to get it, tripping and falling. Nell instead picks up the phone and says that he understands and he'll let them know. He tells the others that his dad is really sick and can't come anymore. He's still going back, but his dad is sending someone he trusts to collect him instead. Jackie tells him that his dad would be here if he could, and Nell will still be back beside him in his rightful place soon enough. Anthony then says that he can't escape his blood. He can run, but it will always run with him, fueling his futile flight. Someone then knocks on the front door, and Nell runs to the door and opens it. He exclaims that he thought it would be them, as it makes sense his dad would send them. He welcomes them in, and SCP-701-1 enters through the doorway, as the audience remains silent. That's certainly a mic drop moment for sure. For some background then, for those unfamiliar with SCP-701, I highly recommend reading that article or watching my video on the Hanged King, but I'll give a quick summary. SCP-701 is about the Hanged King's tragedy, an Elizabethan play that generally descends into madness and chaos whenever it's performed, with it being essentially the SCP version of The King in Yellow by Robert W. Chambers. The Hanged King himself is a pretty enigmatic figure who resides in the fascinating and horrific realm of Alagada, along with his ambassador, who appears during performances of the play as SCP-701-1. The Hanged King is a god-shaped hole, a king of nothing but madness and death that occasionally slips into the Foundation's reality through performances and art. Basically, A Prince Among Men was just one lengthy tribute to the Hanged King that the Foundation let carry out to completion. Dr. Lakshmi Narang, the head researcher on 701, says that prior to the finale, there had not been an SCP-701 event in years. Some of the team wondered if there would be another, and asked how long it would have to be before the object class was reassessed. But then another event took place, and it was beamed live to nearly every family in America. Since the incident with Psi-9, detailed in SCP-2264, they were cautious with explorations of Alagada. There are frequent rotations of staff assigned to the anomaly, with incursions happening under explicit instructions to get in and out as quickly as they can, and to not venture further in. Maybe they were too wary, as it made information gathering difficult. They knew, though, that despite the lack of 701 events, nothing seemed to have changed or developed. Then, in the weeks prior to the finale, there was markedly increased activity, crowds of entities, inhabitants, and visitors alike. They only found one willing to talk to them, albeit briefly. They mentioned they were part of a delegation visiting to attend the coronation. Equipped with hindsight, you can see how the pieces fit together. Yet, at the time, how were they to know that mild anomalous activity on a mediocre US sitcom were connected to these anomalies? They couldn't. It was impossible. But she wishes it was not. Back in the finale, Nell welcomes the ambassador to the party, as the audience remains silent. The majority of the cast do not react to the ambassador, although Jackie's demeanor changes, appearing distressed as she removes her mask. Joseph looks the ambassador up and down before turning to Jackie and quipping that those heels are higher than hers, and he can't keep up with these modern trends. The audience still remains silent. Jackie looks off-screen, towards the camera crew, and asks David what's going on, as this wasn't in the script. The ambassador's head snaps towards Jackie, and she falls silent, with all the cast members except for Nell freezing in place. Nell asks him if he can get him a drink, grabbing a beer from the fridge and offering it to him. The ambassador doesn't react, so Nell remarks that he's more of a wine person, eliciting a quiet chuckle from a member of the audience. Nell then says that that's fine, as he's got a great one he can offer him. He walks over to Allie and asks, how about a nice 16-year-old white, eliciting sounds of faint laughter from the audience. Nell then produces a corkscrew from his pocket, inserting it firmly underneath Allie's mouth cavity and rotating it as he does. Neither Allie nor any other individual present reacts to this. Nell proceeds to tell a couple of jokes as he fills a wine glass with the blood pouring from Allie's head while the audience laughs. The blood overflows the cup, running down Nell's hands and dripping across the carpet. He moves towards the ambassador and says, to returning home. He hands the glass over, and the ambassador accepts it, holding it for the remainder of the episode. Whilst he is never seen to drink from it, its contents diminish with time. He then emits a noise similar to a northern wind flowing between the pages of a forgotten text. The sound tastes of milk, honey, and never said things. White silk on a soft neck. It is tutelage. It is the bond between a father and his prodigal son. It is the promise of ascension and knowing your position. Nell says that he's learned so much being here with them, and there's one thing he's learned above all else. His final lesson is that he is superior to each and every one of them. The audience erupts into wild cheering. The appearance of the ambassador within the finale was flagged as anomalous within 3 seconds of the entity's arrival by a staff member located in the broadcast surveillance hub. It is noted that the hub's cognitohazard shielding successfully deployed and prevented staff from being affected by the anomaly. The decision to shut down a terrestrial television broadcast requires the authorization of 2 officers. Of the 2 supervisors on duty, 1 immediately gave authorization, but in a breach of protocol, the 2nd was not present in the hub. It took 3 minutes and 34 seconds to locate the supervisor in a nearby meeting room, at which point they granted authorization. Broadcast shutdown was enacted, but the anomalous properties kept the broadcast from being terminated. The hub recognized this and immediately escalated containment efforts. In addition to the delays in attempting containment, the identification of the entity as 701-1 took over 6 minutes to be made. Had this identification occurred sooner, the Foundation would have been better positioned to contain subsequent events. At this point within the broadcast, significant anomalous effects began to manifest. The Foundation attempted to shut down the show's broadcast immediately on the ambassador's manifestation, but the anomalous properties resulted in the broadcast continuing unabated. Audiences watching the show experienced outbreaks of sudden, violent behavior. At a bar in New York where the finale was being broadcast on a large television screen, a hushed atmosphere descended upon the bar when the ambassador arrived on screen. Whilst some patrons appear concerned or frightened at the entity's appearance, none leave the premise or cease watching. As the prince and the ambassador interact, some patrons resume laughter, and one patron suddenly attacks the individual next to him with a beer bottle. The bottle shatters, and he proceeds to pick up the broken glass and attempts to feed it to the man. Throughout this interaction, both men laugh. Rioting breaks out in the venue, with viewers randomly attacking anyone in front of them, regardless of prior relationship. A woman is thrown towards the television screen, causing it to shatter, but each individual shard of glass continues to display the broadcast, and the violence continues. En masse, the group exit the bar and continue to engage in random and opportunistic violence with each other and those they encounter on the street. The empty bar is littered with injured individuals, with one corpse sprawled over the bar, the faucet of a beer tap having been forcefully inserted into the left orbital cavity. Beer overflows out of the facial orifices. Another anomalously compromised group exits a watch party at a bar on the opposite side of the street, and the 2 groups collide, with the street being subsumed by violence. Several patrons enter their cars and proceed to use their vehicles as weapons, driving through the group. Scenes such as this erupt across the country. The broadcast continues with Nell walking to the center of the set, the camera following him. The ambassador doesn't move, standing at the edge of the shot. Noises are heard from behind the camera, movement and wheezing, and David Harper walks onto the set. He speaks to the ambassador, stating that he did what was asked of him. He wrote, "They witnessed, an heir for the sterile king." He then unbuttons his shirt, showing the entirety of his upper body to be subsumed by a large mass of inflamed tissue. He turns to face Nell, and the Broker family cast members speak in unison, stating that, "With this, fool's blood, we do ordain." The ambassador then raises his index finger, and the mass of tissue bursts, covering Nell with blood. Harper falls to the floor, dead. The audience's laughter registers new peak decibels and continues uninterrupted for the rest of the broadcast. At this point, the O5 command authorizes the use of Foundation satellite weaponry to neutralize the broadcast and enact containment. The blood covering Nell steams and dissolves his clothes, with the sole exception of the masquerade mask. The ambassador begins to slowly rotate his index finger, and the skin at Nell's right foot is degloved. The skin peels upwards, flaying his leg before detaching. The process repeats across his body, and he is quickly fully flayed, revealing the musculature and bone beneath. He does not react to this process, and the skin floats behind him in large strips. Joseph then says, "And to our king, who could not sire, we provide a tribute. We provide a child." Nell falls backwards, being caught by his skin. The strips of skin move upwards into the air, carrying him. He is still in full view of the camera. The audience's laughter continues to intensify, and recovered CCTV footage reveal that they have begun to engage in flagellation of themselves and those around them, although this does not halt the laughter. Jackie states that, "What is already born cannot be born wrong, but what is born can on rope be strung." Six bone-like protrusions erupt from Nell's scalp, breaking through the skull and muscle and emerge directly upwards. Blood drips from his flayed body onto the set below. Anthony then says, "Raised in secret, raised amongst cattle, what once you were will become your chattel." The four Broker family cast members reach behind their backs and each retrieve what appears to be an antique dagger, not visible in any prior shot. Audience members who have flagellated the skin off their bodies proceed to gouge out their eyes. Allie states that the Hanged King waits for his return. The Pact of Skin is recognized. As she speaks, blood sprays across the set on account of her previous injuries. Each cast member disembowels themselves with their dagger. Their intestines exit their bodies and spill onto the floor. Whooping and hollering is heard from the audience as the cast members begin to speak in unison. They state that, "With this, their blood, they ordain the Hanged Prince." The intestines proceed to tie themselves into one continuous length of organ, and one end floats upwards into the rafters of the set. The other end of the rope of intestines ties itself around Nell's neck. The ambassador closes his hand into a fist, and the lengths of flayed skin supporting the prince cease levitating. He drops as the orbital strike is initiated. The entire set is obliterated by Foundation intervention, and for a second, the broadcast displays a bright white light before ceasing. Following the strike, Foundation agents were dispatched to the scene to investigate. Forensic analysis of bone dust in the rubble accounted for the bodies of 86% of the audience and crew, the four Broker cast members, and David Harper. No biological material attributable to Nell Prince was recovered, and its whereabouts is unknown. The broadcast ended up leading to millions of casualties across the U.S., and a significant deviation from normalcy. Carrington writes that warning signs were missed and procedures were not followed. In this instance, the Foundation failed in its mission of containing the anomalous. Whilst the use of the orbital strike resulted in the cessation of anomalous phenomena, the activation time was outside of acceptable parameters. This was determined to be the result of a containment breach at the site of operation. Several staff members, including those with key knowledge of the satellite array's operation, were compromised following a screening of the finale in the recreation room. Despite concerns being raised regarding the television program's links to the anomalous, these were not distributed to the leadership or security of any Foundation site. This was due to 9998 not receiving an official SCP designation until after the finale's broadcast, leading to finale viewing parties being held in a number of Foundation sites. Ultimately, to achieve containment, in addition to the measures listed, the decision was made to enact something redacted. Some more material from Carrington's report is redacted on O5 authority, although we're informed that it has been deemed acceptable to establish this as an element of new baseline reality. It is unknown how many more times such a procedure could be enacted. The O5 Council have voted to accept the findings of this report, implement select recommendations, and commit to transparency throughout the process. Lastly, we're given one more excerpt from the interview with Gary Warrington, who states that it's a shame that the show is ending. He was pissed when David told him, but at the end of the day, he has to respect the guy and his choices. They'll find something else, as they always do, but he's not sure David will. The way he talks about the show, it's like he has no interest in other content. A real one and done. Carrington asked what he is expecting from the finale, to which Gary just says, big numbers and records broken. When asked about what he expects from the story, he says that he heard some of the writers wager on what they think the final lesson will be. David's had complete control over this show for nearly 5 years. He took over the writing of the finale because he wants everything to be done just right. The writers thought that he would work that into the lesson, about diligence and doing things the right way. The thing is, he thinks that there's a part to this which David just doesn't get. You say diligence, some people might think control freak. Sure, he can control the writer's room, as it's his name at the top of the credits. He can step away from the show, he can retire, but you can't control everything. You're gonna fail if you try. He's created this thing, but it's out of the box now. When something grows beyond you, that's when you lose control. So sure, this series is getting a finale, but who's to say there won't be another? Spin-offs, reboots, cameo appearances. He's not sure that this is the last you'll see of Prince. Because if there's people watching, they've got no choice but to put on a show. Alright. So basically, instead of an old-style play put on by high school students, we have a much larger and more professional production of a television series in which the denouement was broadcast to millions of homes across the country. Although it's largely similar to SCP-701, this was a far more ambitious project as far as the Hanged King and Ambassador are concerned, finding and appointing an heir for the King. The big issue, of course, is that the Foundation was extremely blindsided by the entire thing, to the point that many Foundation researchers were watching the finale live from Foundation sites. A big part of that was them just ignoring and underestimating the whole thing because it was a simple sitcom, and the fact that the UIU were convinced that it was all related to fifthism. On the surface, it wasn't a bad line of thinking, but the Foundation definitely screwed the pooch on that one. They covered it up as well as they could, but the actor that played Nell still was anointed as an heir and vanished entirely, so it seems likely there would be consequences. I can say that I definitely would have been a fan of A Prince Among Men, and that finale is nowhere near as bad as, say, the finale of How I Met Your Mother.